Hello everyone, today is episode 46 of season 1 Reading with Grace, where we will continue reading The Unwanted's Island of Legends. Today we will be picking up from chapter 33, but first a quick recap of chapters 29 through 32. A giant eel attacked Alex and his crew. It battled with Florence until it finally dragged her underneath the sea. Alex realized he has no idea whether Florence can swim or breathe underwater. Alex kept on blaming himself for the loss of Florence, and the rest of the ship mourned her. Miss Octavia told Alex that Simber thinks Florence is his fault, not Alex's. Alex tried to compose himself and then rallied his troops for the rescue of Pirate Island. Soon after arriving at the island, they felt the rumbling warning that it was about to sink again. Simber allowed Alex and a few others to spectate the sinking from his back far up. They noticed people inside strapping themselves in for safety, and in the last moment saw Florence trapped in their underwater aquarium. A most peculiar dinner. Aaron still waited impatiently for his guests to arrive. After his near epiphany the other night and his newfound powers in the jungle, Aaron was more eager than ever to have other people help him reorganize, re-energize, and rebuild Quill into something much more powerful than it had ever been before. He was anxious to take control of Artemy once and for all. He knew he had many of the necessaries on his side. He'd seen to that by giving them food incentives from the favored farm. But Aaron could feel the Wanteds distancing themselves. They hadn't gotten much extra attention when the necessaries did. Only a few Unwanteds to use as slaves, which they had to share, and they hadn't had any personal interaction with the government in a while. It was time to bring them back into the fold and remind them how awful it was that Artemy existed. Once Aaron had them back to full devotion, he could slowly reel in the Quillitary once more. Once he had everyone's support, combined with the ferocious jungle animals, Aaron would be invincible. He'd take over Artemy and maybe even the island where their ships had come from. He even dared picture himself living luxuriously in the mansion in Artemy, ruling over everything. It felt wrong and good at the same time. How would he justify that to the others? It might take some convincing to get them to see that it wasn't the mansion they took issue with, it was the people inside it. Eva Fathom cleared her throat. Aaron looked up to find her standing in the doorway to his office. "What is it?" "It's nearly 8. Shall I summon Liam Healy for dinner?" Eva asked. Liam's home and Quill had been taken over when he went to the Ancient Sector, so Eva had found a small room for him at the top of the palace tower. She'd chosen it for Liam because it had an interesting view overlooking all of Quill, including a close-up view of the barbed wire ceiling, since the tower helps to support it. The room held a few of Justine's things, a dressing table and a chair, a few moth-eating black robes, and a bucket that had once contained a plant. Aaron shoved his chair back and went to the window to look over the driveway. "Is anyone else here?" "No." Aaron's eyes strayed to the outer wall, where the window to the sea had been. He frowned at the cement blocks and tapped his fingers on the windowsill. "Let's wait. I thought you said they'd be coming." "No, I said there was a chance." "How did you invite them? Were you polite?" "More polite than you would have been," Eva said. Aaron strained to look down at the drive toward the portcullis. "Someone's coming, I think," he said. He could feel a tiny shred of excitement building up, but he didn't try to stop it. How long had it been since he'd had any company at all? Besides grumpy old Eva Fathom, of course. "Call Liam." "Am I to join you for dinner?" Eva asked. Aaron turned around to look at her. He stared for a moment. "I suppose. I hadn't thought about you." Eva offered a thin smile. "Of course you hadn't." Whatever sarcasm was in her voice was undetected. "Please accompany yourself to the dining room in 5 minutes." Aaron nodded and turned back to the window. "Perhaps 6 minutes, so I don't appear too eager." "Oh, just make it 10, then," Eva whisked down the hallway, shaking her head. Liam and Eva arrived in the dining room just as former Governor String was ushered in. He had cleaned up quite well. His hair was cut short, his mustache shaved, and his beard trimmed neatly. He wore fresh clothing, though his protruding belly threatened to burst the buttons on his jacket. He almost looked like a fine young man in his early 20s once more, rather than a middle-aged slob who had given up on life. "Good evening, Secretary," Strang said nervously, as Eva and Liam entered. He held his hand out to Liam. "Hello, I'm Septimus Strang." "Of course, Governor," Liam said. "Liam Healy, at your service." Strang laughed uneasily. "Former, Governor, that is." He pulled a wrinkled hanky from his pocket and wiped his forehead. "As you wish," Well met, sir, Liam said. Certainly. Strang looked at Eva with a pained expression. Is it just us tonight, then? No, no, the High Priest will be along presently. He's had a very busy day and is running behind. Help yourself. Eva pointed to a table, where a tray with a pitcher of water and some glasses rested. There may be one more guest as well. I'm not sure. Strang hurried over to a table, poured a glass of water with a shaky hand, and gulped it down. He poured a second glass and held on to it. Liam looked around the room. The palace was a bit fancier than anything he'd seen in Quill before, but it was just as colorless and uninviting. After catching a glimpse of Artemy, everything here looked bland. A moment later, Aaron entered the room wearing one of Justine's black robes. He looked at Eva. Eva withheld the urge to laugh at how ridiculous he looked, and announced, "May I please present the High Priest Aaron? High Priest, I believe you are well acquainted with former Governor Strang and Liam Healy?" Aaron held a limp hand out to the others, as Justine would have done when he first dined with her. Strang hesitated and then awkwardly bowed over Aaron's hand without actually touching it. "May Quill prevail with all I have in me," he said. He taught that very mantra to Aaron when the boy first went to the university. Liam frowned but followed Strang's lead. "May Quill prevail," he said and left it at that. There was a noise at the palace entry. Eva looked at Aaron and raised her eyebrow. Aaron lifted his chin and strained to hear. They didn't have to wait long to discover that Gondolier Rattrap had arrived. The guard at the door had tried to accompany her, but when the acindrigled woman pushed ahead and burst into the room, wearing a bright orange cape over her drab quill clothing. Her hair stood on end, and her face was red and blistery as it had been the day before, perhaps even more so. There were several fresh burn marks on her forearms and fingers. "Hello," she said. Aaron held out his hand to Gondolieri so she could give the proper greeting, but she breezed past and went over to the tray to pour herself some water. She dipped her burned fingers into the glass. Aaron gaped and put his limp hand down. He hadn't seen Gondolieri since before the Restorers attacked Artemy. She'd changed quite a bit from her days of plotting outside the palace gate. "Good evening, Gondolieri," Eva said. "What a shocking cape you're wearing. Where did you find something so colorful?" "I used orange and red peppers from the favored farm as a dye," she said. "They stained my fingers, so I figured they would stain cloth as well." Aaron frowned and glanced at Strang, who was appropriately frowning, too. Aaron held his tongue, but he knew Justine would not approve of a color like that in clothing, and neither would he. Soon they were all seated around the table, and kitchen workers brought the food in and placed it before the guests. Aaron nodded at secretary in approval. It was a fine-looking meal for once. Gondolieri attacked her food as if the chicken on her plate were still alive and running wild. Liam tried not to scarf it down, but he hadn't been eating well at the ancient sector, and it showed in his thin body. He was hungry. Strang savored his food. "This is a lot better than when Justine was high priest." He looked just at no one in particular, but then gave Aaron a fearful look. "I hope it's all right for me to say that. I mean no disrespect to her. I think it must be so delicious because of your favorite farm." "I'm always pleased to hear about how our people are enjoying the improvements of Quill," Aaron said. The forks and knives resumed clinking and clanking. After a moment, Aaron turned to Gondolieri. "How did you hurt your fingers?" "I didn't," Gondolieri said. She stabbed at a potato and missed. Aaron looked at the woman's burns. "Are you sure?" "Quite sure," she looked at him, fork poised to stab the potato once more. "So, High Priest, how do you plan to keep Quill from being attacked now that the idiots and Artemy have been attacking visitors?" "I have plans," Aaron said, "but I'm curious. How would you do it?" "It's not my problem now, is it?" Gondolieri skewered the potato, popped it in her mouth, and sat down her fork as she chewed. "Well, that's what I'd like to talk to you all about," Aaron said. "I've invited you here because I'm looking to bring back governors to the ruling board in Quill. I need people who will appeal to the wanted, yet keep the necessaries from revolt." He looked around the table, from Liam to Gondolieri to Strang. "I'd like you to be my governors, and I hope you will consider it." "What's in it for us?" Gondolieri asked, picking her cheek with a charred fingernail. "Besides work." Aaron smiled. At last, he thought. He pushed back his plate, set his utensils down, and folded his hands in front of him. "My dear Gondolieri, I'm so very glad you asked." Thirty-four. Breathe to Survive. "Florence!" Alex shouted, but there was no chance Florence could hear him. She was stuck inside the glass cage, plunging farther and farther beneath the sea. Simber circled above the water with Alex, Karina, and Skye all straining to see below the surface. It was no use. "Shall we go down after her?" Karina said, ready to jump. Alex put a hand on her arm. "Wait," he said. "Let's just think this through. The eel's down there." Karina bit her lip. "Right," she said, somewhat reluctantly. Finally, Alex directed Simber back to the ship. "We need a plan. Let's go talk this through with the others." He knew that if Florence was alive, she could stay alive in that cage. And at least they knew where she was now. And if she was dead? Well, then staying down there wouldn't change that either, so it was best to be cautious. When Simber and his passengers reached the ship, Alex called a meeting and shared everything they had witnessed. "I think we should take a team underwater to explore," Scene said. "See how far down the island goes." "No way! Not with that eel slinking around," Miss Octavia said. "We don't need any more of us trapped in an underwater cage. Not even I can survive more than an hour or so without air." Simber circled overhead, having no place to land. Fox and Kitten chattered in a corner, and Captain Ahab sat calmly on a bench, saying nothing for now.
"So you breathe," Simber said abruptly.
Alex looked up. "What?"
"Miss Octavia, I mean. You cannot survive without air."
Miss Octavia looked up too and regarded him. "Why, yes, of course. Don't you breathe?"
"I can smell things, but I don't need to breathe to survive."
Simber swooped down the other end of the ship.
"Kitten," he said, "do you breathe to survive?"
"Mew, mew, mew," said Kitten.
Fox stepped up to interpret as usual. "She says that she loves breathing, and breathing is a very important part of her day, one of her very favorite parts, in fact."
"Quiet," Simber said, startling everyone but staring at Fox. "Fox, I understand quite well what Kitten is saying. Thank you. And it's never what you think. In case you didn't realize, like Kitten, I am also a cat. And you, you little piece of termite bait, are not. You are a fox, the smallest member of the Volumpini tribe of the Canidae family. To wit, you are a dog. But by the land of law, you and cats would not be friends. Not ever. And while Kitten may certainly decide for herself that she wants to be friends with you, though I can't imagine why, I am telling you right now, for the first and only time, never ever try to tell me what Kitten says again, because you are always dead wrong. Is that clear?"
Fox stood frozen in fear. After a long moment, he licked his lips and said in a very small voice,
Did you just say,
oh, nuts. He looked down at the deck and was quiet.
"Mew, mew, mew,"
Kitten said to Simber. Simber paused mid-flap, a look of pure disbelief on his face.
"What do you mean, Fox thought he was a cat?"
"Mew, mew, mew."
"A cat whose name is Fox. Now I've heard everything. Good gracious."
The giant feline began flapping his wings once more, so as not to go plunging into the ocean.
"Well, then, I'm sure this revelation has come of a bit of a shock," he grumbled, softening his tone a bit. "There now, you preposterous little rat beast. None of us wants to hear that sort of news, I suppose."
He frowned and circled the ship.
"Back to my question, which is of grave importance. Kitten, you said that you do not need to breathe to survive. You only like to sniff things. Quite understandable for a cat."
Simber looked around.
"What about you, Fox?"
Fox flattened himself on the deck and put his paws over his eyes.
"This cannot be happening," he moaned. "This cannot be happening."
Simber sighed and looked at Kitten.
"Any chance you know the answer?"
"Mew, mew, mew,"
said Kitten.
Simmer's face brightened.
So he doesn't need to breathe either.
He turned to look at Captain Ahab.
What about you?
I, whether lives the Briny Beast, so too I live. Simba rolled his eyes.
Okay, so that's a yes for you and your imaginary whale. You both need to breathe to survive.
Aye, said the captain. Alex bit his lip and looked down, thinking of Spike, who, like Miss Octavia, had definitely been breathing. Simba frowned, still looking at Ahab. After a while, he said in a quiet voice,
"That's quite troubling indeed."
He flew off toward the water that covered the volcano, flying low as if it would bring back his comrade. Alex leaned over toward Lonnie, wanting to make sure he wasn't mistaking what Simba was saying.
"He's asking because of Florence, right?"
"I guess so," Lonnie said. She moved over so that Sam Heat could join them. "So far, it seems like all the statues except Ahab can stay alive without breathing. I think he was trying to guess if Florence could possibly be alive."
"But apparently that's no rule," Alex said, pondering. "Some breathe, some don't."
"Unless you account for the fact that Florence and Ahab are human statues. Ahab needs to breathe, Miss Octavia needs to breathe, but she's not a statue, she's a creature, I guess."
"Like Spike," Alex murmured.
"Who?"
"Never mind.
Anyway, the point is that Ahab is a statue who needs to breathe, and the other statues who don't need to breathe, like Simba and Kitten and Fox, are not human."
Alex looked at Lonnie with alarm.
"Oh, so was Florence like Ahab or like Simba?"
"I hope she's like Simba," Lonnie said, "but I'm afraid she might be like Ahab."
She turned toward him. "So now there's a question that Simba probably wants to ask you, but since you're both being ridiculous, he can't get up the nerve to be vulnerable or whatever, so I'll ask it for him. If we can rescue Florence, and if she's dead, do you think we can bring her back to life?"
Alex didn't know. He grew intensely thoughtful, not noticing that the others had gathered now too, some in the shadow to hear his voice.
He knew he could recreate the Word of Artemis if it disappeared. He could put statues and creatures to sleep, and the restore spell would bring them back to life. But what if they died? Could they die? He'd never seen a creature or a statue die. Well, except for Grimly, but she didn't die, she disappeared. Which wasn't the same. But Alex was quite certain that the whale he'd brought to life was on its last gasp before he put her to sleep. So he was pretty sure that creatures could die. But what about Florence? And if she could die, would they live spell work on her to bring her back to life? And if it would work on Florence, would it work on anyone or anything who had died? At last he rubbed his temples and said, "If Florence is not a breathing statue, then she should be fine no matter how long she is underwater. However, I think that if a statue or creature relies on breath to live, they must also be capable of dying. So if Florence is a breathing statue, I'm sure she is dead now." He went quiet for a moment as the assessment sank in. "I also think, as with humans, if creatures or statues die, their death is final. There is no spell that would bring anyone or breathes back from death. Not human, not creature, not statue. Or we will most certainly have used it by now."
Aaron strikes a deal.
"My goal," Aaron said as dessert was being served, "is to be rid of the Unwanteds once and for all. However, and this may sound a bit shocking, but I hope you'll give me a chance to explain. As much as I despise the Unwanteds and their devious, dangerous ways, I admit I rather like the world they've constructed. I'd hate to see it go to waste. Think about it. Just because we are accustomed to living with so little here in Quill, doesn't mean we have to continue to do so. It seems a waste to destroy their mansion and fountains when ours are falling apart and water is scarce. Winning wars and taking over territory should come with rewards, don't you think?" He looked around at the skeptical faces, but he was worried. He guessed that they, like him, had been secretly curious about the way things worked in Artemis. "Before I tell you what's in it for you, I want you to know it's okay if you'd like to think about it, and you may of course say no if you're not at all interested. But my plan for our mutual reward is to split the magical property four ways. Not equally quite, but you would each get a small portion of Artemis if you were to commit to helping me." Eva looked hard at the spot on the table.
"I count five of us," Gondolieri said.
Aaron looked around confused. "No," he said. "You, Liam, Strang, and me. Four." Gondolieri looked forward.
"What about Eva? Is she a ghost? Don't you see her sitting next to you? Who? Aaron asked, looking first to the wrong side, and then at Eva. Oh, you mean secretary. Well, I'll take her with me, of course. She'll be allowed to live in the mansion in one of my rooms. Gondolieri frowned and picked her teeth. Liam picked up the questioning. I realize I don't really have much of a choice to make, since it's either this or back to the ancient sector, but I'd like to say that I'm in favor of this plan. He glanced at Eva, but she remained still, not looking at him. Excellent, Aaron said, straying. Any questions? I'm not sure how the High Priest Justine would have felt about living in such a colorful place. It could be very distracting. He scratched his head. It doesn't feel right when everything we hate about the creative people would be so evident in our faces. I mean, the flowers and trees, and I can only imagine what's inside of that dreadful place must look like. He trailed off. I can assure you, Aaron said, if only Justine had been given time to take over Artemis before she was expelled from this life, she would have made that mansion hers. She would have thought it a waste to tear down such a structure so useful. And while the decor is ridiculous, it could be toned down to a nice shade of gray, and we could get rid of all the useless things. And let's not forget about how Justine was decorating this palace. She had plants. Indoors. He shook his head. Strang wiped his forehead. Gondolieri leaned toward Aaron. But wait, she said. You're assuming Justine would have been able to keep the magic going. Don't forget what happened to Marcus today was killed. How are you going to keep Artemis if there aren't any unwanteds running in the magical world? We need someone, at least, who knows a little bit about magic. She batted her eyelashes innocently and glanced at Eva. Because clearly none of us can do a thing. Eva's mouth twitched. She glanced at Liam, saw he was watching Gondolieri, and dropped her eyes to the table. Aaron's expression barely flickered, but he wondered now what the extent of his abilities was. If he could make a living statue's tail from a vine and release shackles from his wrists, maybe he could do more. Maybe he could run the magic in Quill. He hadn't even begun to explore the boundaries of his abilities. I'm still working out the details, he said coolly, but I won't be disclosing my solutions until I know who is interested in helping me take Quill to a stronger, more powerful level. Strang shifted uncomfortably. High Priest, if I may. He coughed and took a sip of water. I would like to be a governor again, as if for the pure reason of making Quill stronger, but I don't need any colorful world or mansion to live in. I need no reward at all. Suit yourself, Aaron said matter-of-factly. He smiled. Pleased. So that's two governors so far. He turned to look at Gondolieri. Need more time to think? Or shall I look for someone else to take the spot I've been holding for you? Gondolieri fingered a deep, dried-up scab on her wrist. Oh, I'll take the job all right, she said. She stood abruptly. When do we start? Aaron held back a smile. Now. Your first task, each of you, is to figure out ways to create distrust and unrest between our people and the people of Artemis. I don't mean physically alterations in Artemis like you've done in the past, Liam. What we need to do is get all of Quill to begin banking their rage once more, building up their anger toward Artemis the way Justine did when she was High Priest. Through words and ideas, through thoughts. He hesitated. And I suppose a few faked incidents of injustice to our people would help speed things up. After all, I don't want to spend 50 years getting there. And, he added, I'd maybe even like to give the people of Artemis a little hint of whom they are dealing with. He studied the faces before him to see their reactions. Eva Fathom frowned. Strang stared at the table, his leg jiggling nervously. Liam studied Aaron, tapping his lips, and Aaron could see by the look in Gondolieri's eyes that her thoughts were far, far away. Later, after Strang and Gondolieri had left, Aaron turned to Eva and Liam. It's time for a speech from the beloved High Priest, he said. Prepare for a gathering in the commons. He gave a curt nod, good night, and headed to his bedroom. Eva walked with Liam to the stairs that were taking up to his room. He's dangerous on a small scale, Eva whispered once Aaron was out of earshot. Gondolieri is the one we need to watch. Forgive me, I still don't quite understand what's going on, Liam asked. Eva pressed her lips together, debating. Should she tell him what she suspected? What if she knew, and remembered to be true? If Gondolieri had mastered ice and was now covered in burns, it wouldn't be long before Quill would be swirling in dust. And Eva wasn't strong enough to take on Aaron and Gondolieri single-handedly. She'd had to risk it. She leaned forward. I've known Marcus, Justine, and Gondolieri since we were young children, she said. And when I was a child, I could make it rain.